The Drives podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security, disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group at 865-566-0800 or visit dag-us.com.
It's time for The Drives Top 5 at 5.
Hour number three, quitting time on your Monday afternoon edition of the show. 5 o'clock, Rick Butler in with your top five at five.
All right, gentlemen, number one on the top five at five today. According to The Athletic, the Rick Barnes UCLA story may have had an interesting twist in it. According to the article posted today, The Athletic says this. UCLA then set its sights on Tennessee's Rick Barnes, who had reached out to the school to express his interest. Then once you read a little bit further, says that Barnes was under the impression that he would be introduced to UCLA the day after the national championship game, which is not new news, but the thing about him reaching out first potentially is.
Yeah, it's just another layer to the story, another twist, man. That would be surprising to me. That's something that, you know, we talked about Barnes being so open and honest with the entire process, and, you know, people might not like it that the buyout was the only thing that kept him from taking the job, but hey, at least you know the whole story, or so we thought.
Yeah.
If the entire thing was initiated by him, that's a fairly significant part of the story. And as Brandon said, that would be why UCLA didn't reach out to Philip Fulmer to ask permission. I guess you don't have to ask permission if the coach initiates the contact.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, number two. The NBA is making a lot of money off this 76ers-Nets playoff series, not just from ticket sales or concession sales. The Nets' Jared Dudley has been fined $25,000, and the 76ers' Jimmy Butler has been fined $15,000 for a in-game fight that they had. And on top of that, the Nets' general manager, Sean Marks, has been fined $25,000 and suspended one game after entering the referee's locker room following the game on Saturday as well. Now, entering the referee's locker room is... That sounds like a little
much. That's just something you don't do. Go in the referee's locker room. Oh, my God! Hang on. I don't know. Is that like...
Yeah, I don't...
Beyond
really don't
the pale,
know.
You don't do that?
I don't know. I guess you don't hear about it happening
very much. Do the referees really need a locker room? What's it like in the referee's locker room? Is that luxuriously appointed?
Not usually, not from my experience. Remember, I was a referee for a minute.
Not in the NBA.
No.
You're
high school.
Officiating like Holston Middle School girls basketball.
I was in the high school ranks, buddy.
Oh. Okay. I've seen some of those high school officials, man.
All those dudes wore like I was sitting there, they'd put on like, I mean, you know, I call it what they were. They were girdles.
What?
A lot of those dudes were.
All right, move on.
All right, number three. Speaking of making some money, guys, the rich just get richer. After signing a recruiting class of Zion, Cam Reddish, and R.J. Barrett, Duke has done it again. The Blue Devils received a signature from Cassius Stanley, a top 30 prospect in the country earlier today. Stanley joins a class that already has the number 5, number 10, number 21, and number 36 players in the country who are all 5-stars.
Great.
Yep.
It's the rich continue to get richer. That's why it's imperative for Rick Barnes to either keep Grant and or Bone. And if not, you better replace him with some good players.
Basically. All right, number four. According to Mel Kiper Jr. of ESPN on First Take this morning, there's a 99.9% chance that the Arizona Cardinals are going to select Kyler Murray from Oklahoma with the number one overall pick. Mind you, the NFL draft is this Thursday from Nashville. John Gruden and the Raiders might be of some competition in trying to trade up for that pick, but right now it looks like all signs point to Kyler Murray being an Arizona Cardinal.
Certainly looks that way, and I don't know, man. It's just, I guess, your new coach, you got the number one pick. You let him, he's a quarterback's guy. You let him pick the guy he wants, but 2 years in a row quarterback, Kyler Murray better be what they hope he's going to be, or that's going to be one of the all-time bust picks in NFL draft history.
Yeah, and Cliff Kingsbury has known about Kyler Murray for a long time, recruited him when he was at Allen High School, when Kingsbury was at Texas Tech, so there's a long history there. All right, wrapping up with number five, Peyton Manning has reportedly turned down an offer to join the Monday Night Football team, according to a report earlier today. Manning was looked at to join the job before they went with Jason Witten, and now after Jason Witten has left as well. However, Peyton didn't accept the job because he envisions himself as more of an NFL owner or front office leader, a la John Elway of the Broncos, according to these sources.
That's pretty much what I've thought all along. He's either going to try and figure out a way to build a group, put together a group that can own a team, or because it's so prohibitively expensive, even for somebody with his means, that he would end up like John Lynch, John Elway, basically being given the reins and allowed to run the whole shebang.
All right, Rick, thank you.
Yeah,
is that it?
That's your top five.
All right, top five at five, Rick Butler, the Nature Boy, making his presence felt here this afternoon. Let's bring in friend of the show, Rusty Enzer, former baseball Vol, SEC Network baseball analyst, joining us today is Tony Vitello and the resurgent Baseball Vols, coming off a big sweep this weekend against Kentucky up in Lexington. Hello, Rusty. How are you, sir?
Russell, great to be back on your show and talking a little baseball in a positive way.
I know,
it's a
man.
Good thing.
I know. We don't have to figure out how to polish the turd today. It feels pretty good, huh?
Yeah, we don't have to try to figure out how we're going to try to get into the SEC tournament. Well, listen, we still have some work to do, but Tennessee is in a really good position not only to make the SEC tournament, but get to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2005. So those are both, I guess, goals at the beginning of the season. And, boy, this team's playing some really good baseball right now.
14 years since this program has been to the NCAA tournament. I mean, Rusty, that would be just a monumental achievement, I think, in Tony Vitello's second season.
Yeah, most of the guys that are on the team, now are like in what, the first grade or kindergarten the last time that happened. So they obviously don't remember it. But listen, we Tennessee still has a ways to go. But after 18 league games, they stand 9-9 in the SEC, and they haven't been 500 or better this far into the SEC season since 2008. Now, I just want to warn everybody that in 2008, that was Todd Riley's first year. Tennessee was 10-8. They finished 12-18 in SEC play.
Oh.
So, I'm not saying that to be negative. I'm just saying there's still 12 very key games left to be played, and it starts this weekend against Arkansas, a team that just got finished sweeping Mississippi State. Arkansas is in first place in the Western Division right now.
Wow, so maybe the best team in the conference on the road this weekend. And, Rusty, we've talked for years, your mantra has always been, particularly when going on the road in the SEC, don't get swept. And Tony Vitello talked a couple of weeks ago before the big win against Georgia about how, hey, we need to move past that. If the program's going to take the next step, but we got to start talking about winning these series. And they go out there and get the big win against a top five Georgia program, taking 2 out of 3. I know Kentucky is probably the worst team in the league this year, but still, you sweep on the road, you have done something right. So it feels like Tennessee is, it's on paper, you look at it, it might be asking a lot to go down and win the series against Arkansas on the road, but that's the kind of mentality you have to have, whether it's realistic or not, and it feels like Coach Vitello is starting to instill that type of mentality in his players.
I agree, and here's the one thing about Coach Vitello is, he's coached in this league, so he knows that it's a grind every weekend, and you can't get too high and you can't get too low. But you're right. Listen, it's hard to sweep any team, whether it's home or away, and I don't care who you're playing. But Kentucky threw a guy on Sunday, Zach Thompson, that's you know, he's probably going to be a first rounder. And, you know, Tennessee beat him. So, you know, they're not going to light up the scoreboard. You know, right now they're 10th in the league in batting average in SEC play. They're 4th in earned run average, which is very good. But the difference for this team this year, Russell, I think, that's kept them in so many SEC games is fielding percentage. They're fielding as a team 981. I think they've made one error in the last 9 SEC games, and that's phenomenal. When you listen, you can't give teams in this league 4 and 5 outs in an inning and expect to win a game or win a series. So Tennessee's been able to pitch and catch it as good as anybody in the league, and that's the reason they have 9 wins right now.
How much of that is talent that just happens to be on the roster versus, I mean, coaching? You know, I know all baseball teams practice fielding and things like that every day. But as you mentioned, I mean, that's been a problem for Tennessee in years past, not just last year under Vitello, but going, you know, against Serrano, whether it's errors, base running blunders, just silly things that you can't do when you're outgunned the way we have been the past couple of seasons.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and I think for this team, they brought in some young talent, both freshmen and especially two JUCO players that are playing huge roles for this team. So when you recruit a junior college player, you get a guy that's played already at least a year in college, sometimes two. So you get a more mature type player and things like that. Now, they've never played in the league before, but the two guys that I'm talking about, Al Solari and Ricky Martinez, have made a huge difference for this team. Martinez is a shortstop. He's added a lot of stability from a defensive standpoint, so they were able to slide Andre Lipsius over from short to third. So Tennessee, you know, they had some struggles defensively early on, but those two guys have played some pretty solid defense since the Auburn series, really, on the left side. And Solari's been a huge surprise. He didn't even start in left field until, I think, the 9th game of the season. He was DH'ing and pinch hitting for the first 8 games. But this kid is hitting .378 overall. He's hitting .387 in SEC play. Both of those are in the top 10. His on-base percentage in SEC games is .500, which is incredible. He's the only player on the team, only starting regular, that's batting over .300. So, you know, Tennessee's getting the key hits at the right times, and they're just kind of, you know, they're staying in games because of their pitching. And you have guys like, you know, moving Crochet into the starting lineup on Friday, and Stallings is now the Saturday guy, and Lingenfelter's on Sunday. So you have three arms that have been pitching in this league now for the 3rd year. They may not be the most talented from a draft standpoint, but they're very good college players, and they've added some really good experience and stability on the mound. And listen, I think you have to give Frank Anderson, the pitching coach, a lot of credit. He's done a really good job.
Awesome. So it could be a big series this weekend. We'll see if they can keep it rolling against Arkansas on the road. Rusty, wanted to get your thoughts. I'm sure you saw the interview clip of Coach Vitello talking about the need not only to add more coaches. That proposal was defeated, I believe, last week by the NCAA, but more scholarships. And he was pretty impassioned about, you know, I'm not sure what exactly the number is, 11 or 12 scholarships.
11.7
that they've got to divvy up amongst a 25, 26-man roster, whatever it is. And, you know, I've always thought that was a weird thing about college baseball. But is there any movement to get that number increased? And what did you make of Coach Vitello's comments?
Well, first off, unfortunately, I did not see the interview, but I'm pretty familiar with that situation. I think it's with the way that college baseball has grown in the past 10 years, I mean, it's ridiculous that our sport only has 11.7 scholarships. I mean, there's just no excuse for that. I mean, you have teams in the SEC that are building $40 and $50 million baseball stadiums, and you're telling me that you can't afford more than 11.7 scholarships? I mean, that's just awful. Now, the parity when you get into NCAA play, it is a lot greater because of something like that. But if you increase it by, I don't know, 4 or 5 or whatever, I don't think that's going to kill the parity from a mid-major team or anything like that. I mean, it's just, you know, I really don't know what to say other than that's just poor job management by the NCAA.
Yeah. I sent you that clip of him talking about that. It's pretty interesting. Maybe
thanks.
We'll pick that up on next time we get you on, which hopefully will be soon if we keep this baseball interest alive here, Rusty. It's pretty cool, man, to be sitting here almost through with April and still in there punching and swinging for Tennessee baseball.
I mean, now think about this, Russell. I mean, I think we have I shouldn't say we. I'm sorry. Well, I can. I'm on your show. Yeah. We've got 30 wins overall. And what did we have last year, like 29 wins or something like that, maybe? And we still have, what, 15 games left to play. I mean, this team has a real shot to win 40 games before the NCAA tournament, which is mind-boggling. Tennessee had won over 40 or more games since the College World Series team in 2005. They've got a couple of midweek games left. And then they've got 3 midweek games left, and then 12 SEC games. But now you go 6-6 in those 12 SEC games. That gets you right there to 36. You're 39 if you win the last 3 midweek contests, and you win 1 or 2 in the SEC tournament. I mean, I'm not a mathematician, but that'd be like 40, 41 wins right there.
That put us comfortably in the NCAA, you think?
Oh, there's no question that puts us. What's going to put us in comfortably in the NCAA is going to be 15 league wins.
Okay.
And right now our RPI there is like 8, which is phenomenal. Now, I don't think that's going to be a top 8 national seed. I don't think we're going to be one of the 16 teams that host a regional or anything like that. But, you know, getting into the NCAA tournament, and it doesn't really matter whether you're a 2 seed or a 3 seed. It doesn't really matter. As long as if Tennessee can make it to the NCAA tournament, you just never know what might happen. I mean, you get hot, and with the way Tennessee's got that rotation set up right now, I mean, they could conceivably win a regional. I mean, you haven't heard me say that ever on your show.
No,
usually by this time of the year, the past few years, this telephone the whole interview NCAA, is where we're trying to come up with some convoluted way that we can
get into the SEC tournament.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you're like exactly. Trying to talk us off the ledge.
Now, you know, there have been, you know, if Tennessee finishes, let's break it in, if they finish 14-16 in league play. Now, the RPI is good. Is that good enough to get them in the NCAA tournament? Maybe. They may have to win 1 or 2 games in the SEC tournament. I mean, Tennessee hadn't won a game in the SEC tournament, I don't think, since 2007, which was Delmonico's last year.
Damn,
they beat Vanderbilt
years.
In the first round. But so, you know, listen, there's still a long way to go, and baseball's a funky game, especially when you're dealing with college teams, because listen, they're playing good baseball right now. You know, the hitting in spots, you know, Tennessee's going to be hot and cold with the bats. There's no doubt. They've been like that all season long. But if they continue to pitch well on the mound, field the baseball, don't give any extra outs. They've got a real shot to finish strong in this league. I mean, right now they're in third in the East, which is pretty impressive at this point.
Very impressive indeed. Rusty, appreciate your time, my man. Let's do it again soon.
You let me know when and I'll be there.
All right, thanks, man.
Later on, see Russell.
Rusty Enzer making his presence
much
felt.
Much happier.
He said,
much happier version of Rusty Enzer. Oh, like
yeah,
it.
He said it's a funky game.
Yeah,
funky game.
FUNKY.
Stay with us. The Drive continues. Fan Run Radio. We'll take a quick break. Back with more after this.
The Drive.
Boy, man, you get a psycho killer loose on the Appalachian Trail. Have you heard about this?
No. What the hell's going on?
There's a hiker on the Appalachian Trail who threatened hikers Sunday in North Carolina and could be headed to Tennessee. Sheriff Mike Hensley, I'm not sure where he's sheriff, but he told WCYB that the man is considered armed and dangerous and was last seen carrying a machete and a knife.
That's You got to think about that. I had a guy I used to work with, Pete. He did the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah. Oh, a great book called "A Walk in the Woods" by Bill Bryson. It's hysterical.
Trail.
Yeah, about these.
You think you could do it?
These two older guys out of shape, and they went and did the trail. Yeah, I think I could. I think it would take some
careful planning. Maybe some
pretty
good regimen and getting in shape.
Well, and a little bit of luck too. I mean, it takes some luck from weather wise, and just like it's an undertaking for sure. This sheriff says we have received calls from hikers that a hiker who calls himself Sovereign, that's his trail name, Sovereign.
That's your first tip off there.
Has threatened them on the trail at Devil's Fork and also in Madison County, North Carolina. Last seen entering the Appalachian Trail on Rector Laurel around 5:30 p.m. He has a pit bull with him.
As if things couldn't get worse.
He's armed with a knife and a machete. He has brandished the knife and machete at hikers. But, in that book I read, there was a situation, I think, in the 80s or 90s where, like, some folks were just, like, in their tent and got murdered by just some random guy on the trail.
Really?
Yeah, people attacked, yeah. there's a movie made of that book, too. And so, like, the popularity of the trail has increased significantly in, like, the past 10 years. So there's a lot more people on it now than there were. But, yeah, that's scary, man.
Yeah.
Out there on the trail, you're kind of on your own. It's not like the call 911, have the police come out and get you.
I mean, if you had a satellite phone.
I feel like that could be a lot of fun. You know, maybe we go out there and do a week on the Appalachian Trail, the drive. Like, you know,
yeah, I'll stay here and produce.
Oh, yeah, like, okay, Bear, stay here.
Me, Russell, and Rick on
the
Appalachian Trail.
Rick will carry most of the stuff, and then
Sherpa.
Yeah, it'll be our Sherpa. And we'll bring the remote equipment, some kind of all
some
we need
sandwiches,
is some tasty sandwiches.
I brought sandwiches.
Set up and do the drive. Live in the
set up a table with a black cloth on it.
You think they got wireless up in the Appalachian Trail?
I don't think they've got power. I think you can use your hotspot.
Yeah, that'd be the biggest hurdle, wouldn't it?
We'd have to get the backup system going.
No, that's on my bucket list, man.
Really?
At least try the Appalachian Trail. Yeah.
Time's a wasting, my friend.
Like, how far are you trying to go?
The whole thing.
The whole thing.
Springer Mountain, I believe, is where it starts
in
Georgia,
Dubs,
all the way to Mount Katahdin in Maine.
So Mrs. Dubs is going to be okay with you just taking off for 6 months?
No, she's not.
You going to start at the bottom and go up?
I have to wait till the kids
are
grown.
Are you
going
to start at the top and come down?
I should probably start at the bottom. That's the way most people do it. Go up. That would be my plan anyway. I'll tell you what else is cool. I believe it's on Netflix. There's a documentary about a guy who broke the record for the fastest time ever on the Appalachian Trail. And he went north to south. Started in Maine and like ran the Appalachian Trail. Now, he had people helping him, like he would run like 10-mile stretches, and then like his guy in the van would meet him with like sandwiches and like help him change his shoes and all that stuff. And I can't remember how long it took him. Like, I think most through hikers, if you're going to do the entire thing, it takes you like 3 or 4 months,
yeah,
I want to say.
Yeah, that's a long time.
And I think this guy did it in, I want to say, like 20 days for some reason.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, I mean, he's not carrying his pack. He's sleeping in a van, you know, at night. Like
down
he's,
by the river.
But he did. I mean, he took every step himself, and he's, like, getting blisters and stuff, you know what I mean? But he's moving.
Yeah.
He's moving.
There's some people that do those crazy, like those super long marathons.
Oh, yeah.
Like there's right. one called
like
the
over
Hell
100
West.
Miles.
Where they run through Death Valley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
You know,
that's
there's,
crazy.
You know there's one that's relatively close right up in Wartburg.
What's that?
What?
One of those like crazy super marathons.
Yeah. No, I wasn't aware of it.
How far is it?
It's like 100 miles. It's a 20-mile loop I cannot remember what
through where.
Like
Wartburg
in Wartburg, around Brushy Mountain.
Why would you want to run 100 miles through Morgan County?
I don't know. There's a documentary about it on Netflix, or there was.
The Barclay Marathon?
Yes, that's it.
Ultra marathon race held in Frozen Head State Park in Wartburg.
Frozen Head's beautiful now.
So it's a 20-mile loop, and they run it five times. You run it like clockwise during the day, counterclockwise during the day, clockwise at night, counterclockwise at night, and then the last one is just, it just depends. But most people don't get the last one.
The Barclay course was designed by Gary Lazarus Lake Cantrell. His idea for the race was inspired upon hearing about the 1977 escape of James Earl Ray, the assassin of Martin Luther King Jr., from nearby Brushy Mountain State Pen.
Which is now a museum.
If the documentary is still on Netflix, I would really recommend it. It's really good. And
about
the guy,
the Barclay?
Yeah. And the guy that that came up with the idea for the marathon, talk about a loon. He's crazy.
Should we go to Brushy Mountain?
I would like to. That would be a cool visit. Be able to go to prison without, you know, really going to prison. I've never been in a prison. I don't think I've ever been in a jail either.
Really?
Yeah. Take it you have. Been to jail. No. You haven't been to prison, though.
No. God, no.
You ever been in a prison?
A youth prison. For youth offenders. No. Not as an inmate.
No, about prison. You never visited anybody or anything like that?
No.
Brandon?
No.
Rick?
No.
I'm like you, Ryan. I don't think I've ever even been in a jail.
Nope. Prefer to keep it that way. Although I would go check out Brushy Mountain. Like, I've seen some of the pictures and everything. It looks like an interesting place.
I've been in the Birmingham jail.
It's one of those things, too. Like, you know, scared straight factor. You just want to go and, you know, I feel like you take some troubled kids out there and take a look and say, hey, place you don't want to be. Take a look around, Junior. Straighten up, fly right. End up in a place like this. Not fun. Holding on to the soap. Eating those bologna sandwiches.
Having to make peace treaties with the squirrel man.
Yeah.
Nasty Nate. Got to be looking over your shoulder.
Speaking of looking over your shoulder, you always must have your head on a swivel when you play the Game of Thrones. And coming up next, we will review what I'm calling one of the a top 10 all-time episode last night as we prepare.
It's just a horrible take.
For you don't agree?
No.
Great episode. Great episode of Game of Thrones last night. I can't believe anybody would not like it. We'll get inside the throne zone. We are about to geek out. We are about to geek out hardcore coming up next on The Drive. Come with. Are you coming with us? Come on. Come with us. Get your geek hat on. Get your geek on. Coming up next on The Drive.
The Drive.
The Drive's podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group today at 865-566-0800. Applying for disability can be very tedious. Having an experienced attorney on your side makes it easy. Call Disability Advantage Group, 865-566-0800, or visit online at dag-us.com.
All right, it's time for everybody's favorite segment. And when I say everybody, I mean roughly 27% of our audience.
I go with a higher percentage than that.
Let's get inside the throne zone.
Let's do it.
Grading last night's episode, I tell you, I give it an A+. Everything takes place at Winterfell. There's only been one or two episodes that have taken place all at the same location. The sense of foreboding, tying up the loose ends, definitely foreshadowing a game-changing third episode. My favorite part, probably the comic relief from Tormund. I felt like he kind of stole the episode last night. I give it an A plus. Bear, you disagree.
Russ, I'm going to go with it. I feel like it was a solid B plus. I don't like, we talked about it during the last break, about how it's six episodes and they're trying to tie up all these loose ends. I do not like this whole Daenerys taking the heel turn. It just seems kind of trite and just a little bit lazy to me by the show writers. I expect something a little bit better out of them.
You think she's taking a heel turn?
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I think she's actually...
Because right now she's pretty much just a self-absorbed twit.
I mean, her whole thing, I mean, from the very beginning, her whole thing has been about getting to the Iron Throne.
Yeah,
that's her whole goal.
Look, buddy. Story's changed. I got sour news for her. She ain't got the Iron Throne right now.
Hold on. She doesn't know that. And she makes some pretty good points. Oh, you've got a claim to the throne? According to who? Your best friend and your creepy-ass brother. I'd be skeptical, too. So would you.
John doesn't even care about it right now. That's my whole point. You're getting ready to fight the Night King and the Army of the Dead.
And she'll be there for the battle, but it is a hurdle that they're going to have to cross at
some
point.
Sansa Stark will not bend the knee to her, and I don't blame her. I think she's going to be the Mad Queen.
Do you think this is a heel turn for Dany?
I mean, I can kind of see things setting up where there's... I feel like... her and John are going to have to
battle.
Maybe do you not, think she's going to
maybe
be
not
evil?
Battle.
Do you think? I mean, do you think she's going to like? I see what you are. You going with the whole? She's the daughter of the Mad King. She's going to. She's already fried the Tarly boys. Like she's going to go full villain moving forward. Because I don't, man. I think they're going to work out their problems. She's a good girl, Dany. She'll come around. She just wants what's best.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, I feel like there's going to be a lot of people die coming up this week. I think it's going to test everybody, Russ. It's going to be really hard.
Rick Butler, your thoughts. Give me a grade for episode two of the final
A+.
Season.
Yeah, I would certainly say it's in the A range. I think there was maybe one moment where I was like, all right, let's fast forward. And maybe that was with, you know, the girl wanting to be the young girl wanting to be a part of the army and Gilly. You know, Gilling being like, oh, you can protect the crypts.
I think there's some foreshadowing there, too.
See, I do, too, but personally, I don't know where that's going to lead to. I think something's
going to happen in the crypts.
Certainly. There was a lot of instances towards it.
There was a showdown, or the talk between Jorah and Lady Mormont.
Well,
that was pretty cool.
I've got a theory about the crypts. This is...
Okay.
So I believe that the Night King isn't just... I think he's a Stark.
Okay.
I think he was before the family. So.
And if you remember back to the very first episode, remember Maester Luwin? He's talking to Bran. Mm-hmm. Or not the first episode, but like the first couple of seasons. He's talking to Bran about tunnels so that the Lords of Winterfell could escape. If it was
you
ever
think
under
he's
siege.
Coming through the
he's
tunnels.
Coming in through the crypts.
Yeah. That's what I think.
Kill all the women and children.
Because... fast forward to the very end of the episode, you don't see the Night King with the rest of the White Walkers.
And how many of those guys were there? It looked like there was a ton of them. Oh, Craster, he's busy, wasn't he?
Yep.
I had another theory kind of going on what Brandon's saying that has to do with the Night King not being at the end. There was no, you know, you also didn't hear any dragons either. What if the Night King himself is taking a detour and he's going down to King's Landing?
Well, I think that's a major question mark here is what role will the dragons play, all three of them, in the battle at Winterfell? And then here's the other thing is will the Night King be able to resurrect the dead Starks in the crypt? Are we going to have a headless Ned Stark run around? Is Lyanna Stark's, you know, you laugh, Brandon, but I mean, it's possible. He can raise the dead, and it's called a crypt because there are dead people down there.
Well, maybe that's where all that storyline comes to a point. Is you have all those people in the crypts, but then you just start seeing dead people there too. But I just think, I personally don't think that the Night King will be in Winterfell in next week's episode. I think he's doing something else. I think something else is going on.
All right, who are the best candidates to die. I think we all agree.
Flaming sword guy.
We're going to see some guys kick the bucket.
Brienne of Tarth.
Key characters.
After that, after the whole the knighting scene.
You think she dies before Jaime?
Next week?
What?
Did you see the scenes from next week?
Yeah, where she's standing there screaming, hold the line?
Yeah.
She's biting the dust.
Yeah. The Flaming
With
Sword
the Knights
guy.
Of the Vale.
Beric Dondarrion.
There's no way the Hound. The Hound's going to make it back to King's Landing to fight the Mountain.
I feel like Jorah dies.
See, really?
Yeah.
My number one death, I think Theon's a goner. By the way.
He's going to be standing next to the Three-Eyed Raven in Godswood.
Yeah, no way.
I think he's definitely dead. I think he's the first to go. And does anybody else find it weird? Like, Bran, the Three-Eyed Raven, one of the keys to the story, they're going to use him as bait. But the guy they're going to guard him with, like the least dependable character in the entire series, is like, Theon's like, I've got this. And nobody's like, no, I think we're going to send John or Jorah or, you know, somebody who's actually brave and doesn't have a history of wussing out. Yeah. Like, we're gonna send a couple of badasses to protect Bran. No, you're not going to send Theon. Like, that was a minor plot hole in my humble opinion. Minor plot hole there, letting Theon manage Bran's security.
I don't know. I mean, if you go back to the earlier... If you go back to the earlier seasons, that was kind of the role. Remember when the Wildlings had a knife to one of the little guys' throats before Theon went bad? And he just pounded an arrow into one. I'd kill them.
I think Theon is definitely a goner. I think Tormund.
No!
I think Tormund goes down, and here's why.
Think he's going to try and save Brienne?
Yeah, I don't think Brienne dies because... If you watched the inside the episode thing with the showrunners after last night's episode, they went on and on at length about the feelings that Brienne is coming to terms with that she has for Jaime. Tormund is not going to be able to consummate his love for the tall woman. I think Jaime and Brienne, I think they might hook up. I think they might hook up. And to do that, they both have to survive, my opinion, because they're not going to be doing it during the middle of the battle.
As I would place my entire salary that I make here at Fan Run Radio.
It's an astounding amount of money.
It is. I would place every single penny that I make here on the fact that Grey Worm dies.
Oh, yeah. He's
They wrote him off in his very short manner. He's a goner. That's my number
now,
one.
Which
lock.
Ones of them, the real twist will be when they join, you know, they're going to end up being White Walkers.
Yep.
So you end up having to kill your friends and family.
I thought it was a great line about Tyrion. He's like, well, maybe if I'm dead, I can come back to life and go kill Cersei as a zombie. speaking of that, when will we go back to King's Landing? Do you think that happens at all next episode, or have we placed that entire storyline on hold for two entire episodes? I think we have, probably, right?
Yeah, unless at the end of the next episode, the Golden Company shows up just to wipe them out. Like somebody, I can't remember which character said, maybe it was that as soon as they get done fighting the Army of the Dead, if they win, that Cersei and the Golden Company are going to just destroy them.
I mean, next week's what, 80-something minutes?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, next week starts from here on out.
Yeah, this next episode's the one that held it up, right?
Well, here's
the 57 nights they took to film it.
Here's my question about this episode. Will this battle be, how decisive will it be? Will it be a winner take all? Could the White Walkers be wiped out, leaving us to focus on the war between Dany and Jon and Cersei for the last four episodes?
I hope so.
Does this conflict between the dead and the living linger until the very end?
Well, no, there'll only be three episodes after this one.
Is it six episodes for the season? Okay.
I hope they do, because like I told you earlier, I don't really care for, like, I could do without this whole part of it. I mean, I know it's gotten too hokey for me.
The whole part of what?
The whole deal right now with the undead. It's like The Walking Dead to me.
You don't care about that part?
No, I want to.
That's
get
my favorite storyline.
No.
Yeah.
Cersei versus the world's mine.
It's harder, and I've seen other people voice this, like, it's harder to be emotionally invested in the White Walkers and the dead because they They're not characters. You know, they don't speak. They don't have storylines other than we're here to kill. So they're not very deep characters.
We got about 6 hours left. No, nine. What? Hour and a half, three. Yeah, about 6 hours left.
How do we feel about Arya?
Yeah, that was a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable for me. I'm not like seeing your niece. It just did.
She's 22 years old.
I'm sure she is, but we watched her grow up as a little kid. Blossoming. Didn't need to see that. But Gendry told her he was a Baratheon, and she was fired up, though, wasn't she?
Yeah.
What if
she's preggers now?
That's
the Baratheon Stark union that Robert Baratheon wanted from the very beginning.
In the crypt. I have a son, you have a daughter.
Yeah. How about that? You stop and think about that?
I don't know. They said the scenes from next week, the one that they've shown for a couple of weeks now, is Arya with some kind of head wound running terrified through the crypts. That leads me to believe, we've got a limb here, Gendry ain't making it past the next episode.
Mm.
I think he gets turned into a white.
Mm. That's a pretty good theory. It's a pretty good bet. Anything else, Brandon, Rick Butler, any other comments before we exit the throne zone? And
what about Sam giving Jorah his family sword? I can't even hold this thing.
I think he realized that he's no badass. Jorah could, you know, it's Valyrian steel. He could kill White Walkers with it. I
do like that he did stand up for himself, though, up on the wall. Yeah. It's him and John.
And I think him giving the sword, I think that probably foreshadows Jorah probably does kill at least one White Walker with it.
Before he dies.
My last comment is that I think that the conversation that Tyrion and Bran had, where Bran basically told Tyrion his whole life story, I think that comes up big time at some point during the remainder of the season. First off, you got to think that with all of Tyrion's blunders lately, he's got to have some kind of redemptive moment. Second off, that would just be a really pointless thing to add if it didn't. We all know Tyrion is a curious man in nature. I think that has some serious implications down the road.
Couple of quick comments from Twitter. Uncle Chuck says, what if Arya pretends to be Bran to lure the Night King into the crypts?
How can she do that without Bran's face?
Yeah, he's not
he
dead
would have
yet.
To be dead.
Farmer Puddin says, I think they fall back to the Vale, which is the easiest place to protect. I've said, I think they fall back to the Iron Islands.
They kind of set that up. They've already kind of set that up with Yara going back.
They're going at some point.
The last three episodes, you think the good guys will be in the Iron Islands and...
I could see that being their rallying point. Like, whoever doesn't die in the next episode rallies at the Iron Islands and, you know, you either have to attack what... You know, maybe the dead continue march south. Maybe the dead kill Cersei. And then...
Cersei becomes a white?
Yeah. Maybe that's the final straw is, you know, one last...
Maybe she becomes the Night Queen.
Maybe Cersei's the Night King.
Ooh.
For a non-season premiere, never has there been an episode of Game of Thrones as anticipated as this one coming up, episode 3.
God, all the build-up for it.
Oh, my God, man. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. All right, there it is, the Throne Zone. Here on this Monday afternoon edition of The Drive, we'll jump back in on Friday to get you ready for the aforementioned battle. Going to be huge. Going to be awesome. Stay with us. The shocking conclusion of The Drive coming up.
The Drive.
All right, wrapping up The Drive on a Monday afternoon. Hope you're doing well. Overtime Boys coming up next. Two more hours of quality local entertainment headed your way. Here on Fan Run, coming up Wednesday, we'll be out at Old Ben Franklin Motors in West Knoxville. Looking forward to being back out there Wednesday afternoon. Come on out and see us. I'll have Smokey's tickets for the first time this year. So if you want to go out to the ballpark, go to a ball game, make plans now to swing by Old Ben Franklin Motors at 9711 Kingston Pike. We'll be right across from Franklin Square in the Chop House right over there on Wednesday from 3 to 6. Swing by. Let me know how many tickets you need. We should be able to hook you up on Wednesday. You're looking to go to Smokey's game. Come on out and see us at Old Ben Franklin Motors. Shout out to our friends at Citizens National Bank, the official bank of the drive, where you can earn 1.75% on a free checking account at Citizens National Bank. 21 branches now throughout Knox, Sevier, Jefferson, and Hamblin counties. Visit cnbtn.com for a branch near you at Citizens National Bank. Wrapping up the show here this afternoon. Are we wide open, Brandon?
Wide open.
You jump in real quick here, 865-546-8200, 546-8200. I'm thinking about...
What you thinking about?
As long as we're geeking out here. Thinking about watching The Avengers.
Nah.
That new movie coming out.
Hold on. What?
You want to take...
Think about jumping back in. Because
You can't just jump in now.
Hold on. The last superhero movie that I really liked was the first Avengers movie. And after that, I was just like, I've been here, done this. I never saw there. This is the third one coming out, right?
This is the fourth.
Okay, so I haven't seen the second one.
Did you see the last? Did you see
no.
the third one?
Why would I have seen the third if I haven't seen the second?
You need to watch the second and the third.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying is I think I'm thinking about watching the second and third so that I can watch the fourth.
Okay.
Because the fourth one's coming out this week, right?
Yes.
And it's going to be the motion picture blockbuster event of the summer, right?
Yeah.
Is this the biggest movie of the summer?
No.
What else is coming out?
What are the summer movies? They don't put out the summer blockbusters in April.
This one has broken all the records already in pre-sales, in the fastest pre-sales. The Avengers before this got within like the top one or two or three of the biggest box office all time.
That's because they keep jacking the ticket prices up.
This is a shell game, my friend.
Nothing will ever top Star Wars, the original. It was in the theaters for like 2 years.
Doesn't matter. This one's going to be the biggest of the decade. No doubt about it.
But yeah, you got to watch the other two.
Should I do it? Should I give the superhero movies another chance?
I think you should, Russ.
Oh, now hold on.
I think you should.
Yeah, let me. You want to hear some of the ones, blockbusters that are coming down the summer?
Yeah. What are the big ones?
Okay, let's see here.
Don't rush.
Come on, Bear.
No rush.
May 1st, Knock Down the House, The Intruder, Long Shot,
Whoa. Don't list every movie that's coming out this summer. What are the big ones?
The live-action Lion King comes
out. Live-action Lion King.
Is that going to be good?
That's
John
be
Wick, Chapter 3. Unreal. Can't wait for that one. Aladdin.
Is it a live-action Aladdin?
Yeah.
I believe so. Godzilla, King of Monsters.
They should space those out, right?
Rocket Man.
Is that like a video, a movie of the Elton John song?
Men in Black.
Just face it, Bear. Shaft. This is the biggest movie.
Toy Story
of 4. The year.
Toy Story 4.
When's it coming out?
Huge movie.
When's it come out?
Huge movie. Huge.
When does
Toy
it come?
Story.
When does it come out? Because Russ last
June
for,
21st.
Ah, I thought it was later than that. Never mind.
Hey, Russ.
Spider-Man: Far From Home.
Me
21
and my
Bridges
are going
the Lion
to see
King,
the Avengers.
The Boy, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That's great.
At 12:15 a.m. on Thursday, if you want to come.
We can get you an extra couple of dorks.
We can get you tickets.
I gotta watch the other ones first.
Before Thursday. We're going 15 minutes past midnight.
It, Chapter 2.
Ooh. When's that come out?
Ooh.
September 6th.
You need to see the It movie from a year ago.
The Drive needs to go see It, Chapter 2.
That was absolutely terrifying, man.
We need to go see It, Chapter 2.
What about just terrifying.
Do you know the Addams Family? They're redoing that again?
Again? Mm-hmm. All right, Pod will be up momentarily. If you missed anything, be sure to check that out. We'll be back tomorrow, 3 to 6, overtime coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio.